Myth and Politics of Troy, Part 2, Middle Ages to 1870. The medieval romances of Troia, knights' tales dating from the 12th and 13th centuries, recount the allegorical testimonies of two veterans, eyewitnesses of the fall of Troy. One is Chrétien d'Ixis, assigned to the 1st and 3rd century AD. The second is Pheringia d'Ares, assigned to the 2nd through the 5th century AD. In consequence, Franks, Burgundians, Normans, Britons, and the Turks, as well as the Romans, began to see themselves as descendants of the Trojans, particularly in the period following Charlemagne. The Franks convinced the folk of their newly established empire with a legendary heritage, if only outwardly supported by false beliefs that Xanten or Xanthos or Colonia Tyrrhenae, the colony of Troiana, the Knights of the Fourth Crusade, 1202-1204, which never reached the Holy Land, but was directed by Venetian manipulation to attack Constantinople, particularly justified their truly devious schemes with the excuse that they had come to avenge the siege of Troy. As Crusader Peter von Brockall explained to an enemy commander, quote, "Troy belonged to our ancestors, and those who managed to survive came to live where we are from. And because they were our ancestors, we have come to reconquer the land of theirs." End of quote. Very similar was the attitude of Mehmed the Conqueror. After the fall of Constantinople in 1453, he too visited Troy and the burial mounds on the plain, 1462, to make it clear to all that the disgrace against his land had finally been avenged. Of course, the Ottomans are from Central Asia, but, you know, everybody's story is everybody's story. Troia, however, was much more than a focus serving to legitimize political actions. The story of the Trojan War became one of the foundation stones of Greek and Roman civilization, the heart of its culture in the ancient world. The High and Late Middle Ages traced chivalry and nobility back to the supposedly common story. Thus, the feats and deeds ascribed to the Trojan legend have embroiled Troy and its landscape in the very roots of Western culture and history. Homer presents quite an accurate description of the Trojan landscape, circa 700 BC. The port and his associates must have wandered across the plain of the Scamander River, perhaps strolling as far as the former harbor, by then already silted up to the Aegean shore. In the 8th century BC, remnants of the citadel walls would have been produced above the still visible fortifications of the lower city. The camp where the Achaean ships would have been beached would not have been visible. This is also reflected in the Iliad, contemplating the strong fortifications of the Achaean camp. Poseidon complained that the walls of Troy cast a shadow over the walls protecting the slips. Zeus then suggested that the Earthshaker destroy the walls and cast them into the sea upon the retreat of the Achaeans. Most classical philologists of the 19th and 20th centuries interpreted the context of the ancient epic as sheer fiction. They most painstakingly contested every detail. Some even went so far as to deny even the existence of Homer. Nevertheless, travelers have been combing the area since 17th century for traces of what they had learned in their youth from reading Homer's epics. They could, without difficulty, recognize the Hellespont. They could recognize the islands. They could recognize the mountains. They could recognize the rivers. But they couldn't find the seaside trace of fortifications by the besiegers, probably made of wood, not stone, and, of course, where the harbor was. Travelers had speculated during the 18th and 19th century that Priam's citadel was the military strategic settlement known as Bundarashbush, or Pinsirabi, or Ilium Fetus, which was 8 kilometers south of the unassuming mound of Hisarlik, even though it rose 31 meters above the plain, but covered an area not much bigger than that of a large football stadium. Of course, this is exactly where the Greeks and the Roman scholars placed it. They believed Ilios/Troy/Volusia was here. The site was called Ilium Novum, or Ilium Regens, in the 18th and 19th century. In 1863, Englishman Frank Calvert finally began the dig at Hisarlik, to be followed in 1870 by Heinrich Schliemann. Both explorers had been directed here by Homer, not by anybody else, but not without some difficulties. You know, Schliemann actually ran around the hill. He looked other places. He was befuddled by not having the harbor there, and a whole variety of things. But this isn't the only place in ancient history that disappeared. I mean, Nineveh disappeared, only to be discovered in the 1800s, and other places. So it's not that unusual. So that's how the Trojan legend has been kind of used by others throughout the years. Now, the sources for this is Troy by Askin, Troy 1700 to 1250 BC by Fields, Guide to Troia Volusia by Korfman, In Search of the Trojan War by Wood, Helen of Troy by Hughes, and The War at Troy by Quintus of Smyrna. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us with a donation or a monthly subscription. Thank you very much.